Welcome into Time Out with Taylor Rooks, now on the SNY.TV audio network. Be sure, before we get started, subscribe, rate, comment on iTunes and SoundCloud, whatever you use to listen to podcasts. Head there, drop something for me. Happy to be here, happy to have you listening. CJ McCollum is today's guest, and he came at the perfect time of the year. The NBA playoffs are here. And as much as I love college basketball, obviously the level of talent you see in the league is unmatched. I mean, by far. And we've been able to see amazing performances so far this postseason. And I don't think that we always sit back and appreciate the time of the game we're living in. The guards we watch now are truly changing the game of basketball, changing the way that teams defend. And the Blazers backcourt of CJ and Dame are one duo that's really a big part of that. And I think few players have made as many strides as CJ in such a short amount of time. And on this podcast, we discuss his growth and his ascent to stardom, essentially. Plus, there was a certain Paul George tweet. I don't know if you saw that. We dive into that within the rules of the NBA, of course. We discuss, what do you do when you find out that you're going to make more than $100 million? And who can guard CJ McCollum? If not Steph, then who? I ask him all this and more. CJ's a guy that's so easy to root for and such a genuine human being. He's so passionate about the youth and expanding their mind to the world around them. We're going to delve into that too. So much to discuss in this episode. Let's get to it.
CJ McCollum in the building, a year in the making. When did I ask you to come on the podcast? It had to be like a year ago.
It probably was a year ago and some change, honestly.
Yeah, but you have finally made it to the city, coming on the podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on
here. Of course, I appreciate you coming on. I mean, you're a star now. So, I mean, I don't really know if we're worthy enough to have you on.
I'm an average Joe. I just took the subway and only a few people recognized me. It was great.
Only a few. Just a casual subway ride.
The 2K players.
But, I mean, do you feel that right now that you are a star?
I think it's all relative to who you ask. I think I'm a very good player. I have a lot of room to grow and develop as a player and as a person, but I say I get paid like a star, so.
Right. Well, you got 100 plus mil in your contract.
God is good.
That's a lot of money.
God is good.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. When you know, okay, I'm gonna make that much money, what is the first thing that just kinda goes through your mind?
Well, I actually found out I was in Vegas. So I was doing a photo shoot for Nike and I was about to fly back to the East Coast for my brother. He was in the TBT tournament.
Eric, love Eric.
Yeah, so I was about to fly back and I got a call from my agent. He's like, stay on the West Coast. I'm like, for what? Like, I need to go.
Yeah.
He's like, we're about to finalize your deal. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, how much? He's like, it's going to be over $100 million. I was like, what? He's like, over $100 million. I'm pretty sure it's going to be over $100 million. And I almost vomit. I almost vomit. It was like an outer body experience, and I was like, wow, this is crazy. But just thankful, and I've worked extremely hard, and the organization has put a lot of trust and faith in me, and just look forward to repaying them as much as I can with wins and good production.
But I mean, it's also breaking that 100 mil mark is kind of a milestone for NBA player.
Yeah.
I mean, it shows really how much you are valued by your team. So is that maybe the feeling you got more than anything?
Yeah, I think it's just a sense of belonging, understanding that they're grateful for what I've done for the organization. I'm grateful for what they've done. And it's a sign that, you know, when somebody gives you that type of money, it's more than just an athlete. It's more about how you are as a person as well, because they have to be able to trust you, understand you're going to do the right things, understand you're not going to wild out with the amount of freedom and money.
You're not wilding?
No. I just told you I got off the subway.
Exactly,
I was handling some business at Columbus Circle, so I'm getting familiar with the stops.
Look at you.
Yeah, it's a whirlwind, but I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the process, the ride. I'm thankful I'll be able to take care of my family and have that generational wealth and that generational income, and now you just got to make it last and invest well here in New York City and figure out how to make my money make money.
So, Paul George. Mm-hmm. You want Paul George to be a Blazer.
Well, I think this is tampering at this point. I tweeted it. So we have to be careful what we say. I don't know what type of viewership we're going to face right now with this. But I read something that I could get tampering. I don't want to get fined $25,000.
I'm with you. I mean, even though you got that 100 milli, yeah, you don't want to get fined.
I mean, you
got
to be smart about it. I don't want right. Mr. Allen being upset at me. They asked me a question on Twitter. They said, what would you like to see? And I was like, at YG Trace, why not? Mm-hmm. Paul George is the homie. He's with Nike. I've had some discussions with him just about the season and obviously about what it's like to go from, you know, he was behind Danny Granger. Mm-hmm. He's behind Danny Granger for a while. He gets hurt, and then he comes up and becomes a star and kind of takes over. So just kind of talking to him about his mindset. And he would look great in red and black, that's all.
Yeah, well, I mean, tampering aside, I mean, just as a player, what is it that you like about Paul George?
I mean, he's very versatile. You've seen it in the series against the Cavs, and he can guard, obviously, being able to match up with LeBron and try to contain him. He can score the ball in a variety of ways. He has good jump shot. He can, you know, handle it. Got the pull-ups, mid-range, can get to the free throw line, and obviously, he gives you that star power, as you said before. And you're in the Western Conference. Obviously, there's a lot of very good teams, a lot of teams that are deep, a lot of teams that have 3-4 horsemen. Some teams have 5, mm-hmm. and you have to be able to match them blow for blow and be able to understand that it takes a lot more than one good player, 2 good players, 3 good players. You need to have a collective unit. So obviously, Paul George would help any team in the NBA.
And, you know, after your team's loss to the Warriors, I mean, Kevin Durant came out and said that he was so impressed by you and Dame, that you're 2 of the best guards he's seen, and that you guys are just a couple pieces away from contending. Is that kind of the mindset you have with it, too? You just need maybe one more person to make it there.
Well, we feel like, you know, after this is our second year losing to the Warriors. We played them last year. They were a little banged up. Steph was on and off hurt, and we end up losing in 5 games, and this year we got swept. But just being able to go up against them and kind of figure out, you know, what it takes to win in the playoffs. It's a different environment. It's a different setting. You're going to go on runs and in-laws and things like that, but it's more about how you finish the games. And we've seen, you know, what it takes to win a championship based on how they finished us, you know, the last 5-6 minutes of the game, being able to execute, being able to get stops when you need stops. And
how much does it pain you to say that?
I mean,
that you lost to them 2 years in a row?
It is what it is. It's a reality. I'm a realist, and we need to get better individually, collectively, and whether that's 1 piece, 2 pieces, whatever the case may be, I'm sure our organization will do the right things. Neil's been great in the front office, making decisions, getting us draft picks, obviously accumulating. Nurk's been big for us, so I just control what I can control, work hard, get better, and be ready to go next year.
Now, you're in this moment kind of like a unicorn, because your GM said something about you that most GMs never say, and that's that you're virtually untradeable. What is that like? Because most NBA players are like on pins and needles, like, am I going to be here next year? What am I going to do? But although things do change, he said, I know people don't like to say people are untradeable, but CJ and Dame are untradeable.
I mean, that's a high compliment.
Yeah.
I'm thankful for that. It means a lot to me. It gives me that security after just purchasing a house. You know, that's something you want to hear.
Oh, purchasing a house, no big deal.
That's something you want to hear after you buy a house in the city. So I do appreciate that. And I mean, I've worked extremely hard. Obviously, I know things can change in the future, but I'm happy to be here. I'd love to be here. And as I always say, I'll be here as long as they'll have me. So to know that is comforting, and I'm sure my family appreciates it. And I'm sure Dame appreciates it as well. So we just got to continue to build. The biggest thing is, if you win, then that shuts up everything.
Oh, of course. So, but then when you lose.
Yeah, like we did this year.
Yeah.
It was, you know, maybe they can't play together. Maybe they can't do this or that. Maybe they should break up the team. So you have to win. That's the bottom line.
Now, you brought up Dame, and I think that it's really an interesting dynamic because, I mean, I love Dame. Love his music. He's such a great dude. But it would be so easy for there to be a player like you and a player like Dame and you guys not get along. It happens all the time in the league that it's almost a rivalry between, you know, the 2 stars on the team, but that isn't you guys. You like each other. You like hanging out. How did you build that dynamic with him?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We both came from small schools. He went to Weber. I went to Lehigh University, a few years apart in terms of the age. He's 26. I'm 25. So I went through the same injury he did. He broke his foot. He fractured his 5th metatarsal in college. His junior year, I ended up fracturing mine my senior year. So mm-hmm. I just kind of reached out to him through a mutual friend that connected us and just began to ask him questions about the process, the recovery process, what's it like to play in the NBA from a mental standpoint, and how did you overcome the obstacles? How did you get yourself ready, you know, after not playing? And he basically assured me that I would be all right. He kind of kept me in the loop with my draft process, let me know where he thought I might get drafted, and checking out some of the draft boards for me, so giving me that insider trade. So I think since we're in Wall Street, I just watched Billions last night.
You know, I gotta tell you about. You know all about the insider trading.
Yeah. So it was interesting. We were friends before I even got to the NBA, before we even became teammates.
Yeah.
So we had talked for months. We ended up meeting in person at the draft lottery in New York. And that was our first time meeting in person. And I just remember there's pictures of us like dapping each other up. And it was funny when I was about to get drafted, he texted me like, uh-oh, after the 9th pick went, because they had 10. And I thought I was going to go, you know, in that 1 to 11 range. And obviously not number one, but in that in that range. And
don't count yourself out, though.
It happened. He texted me, and then my phone died right after that. So I ended up hitting him up later on.
No way.
Yeah, it was blowing up.
Oh my gosh! That's amazing.
I got like 4,000 new followers, and I thought I was.
Oh, you were popping. 4,000?
That was it.
Where are you at now?
On what?
Oh, let's just talk about it. Where are you at Instagram? Where are you at Twitter? Where are you at Snapchat?
I don't know what I'm at on Snapchat. I get a lot of views though, and it's been. I actually opened it up to the public the day of the ESPYs because one of my guys out there.
Oh yeah, you have your own like verified little. Snap emoji.
Shout out to my friends at Snapchat. I need to go see them.
You have a filter.
I do.
CJ's Fine Foods.
CJ's Fine Foods. While we're at it.
You cook so.
I'm sorry. I'm going to cut you off.
Plug it.
You can follow my Snap at CJM313. You can follow my Instagram at 3J McCollum and my Twitter.
Go ahead. Plug it.
At CJ McCollum. My Instagram right now, we're making progress after the playoffs. I've overcome the 400,000 mark, so that's a small milestone. Trying to get to 1 million.
Yeah.
I think I'll have to sip some fit tea like some people on there. And
do a waist trainer.
Do some waist trainers and
add your
like
hashtag
to get more followers.
The hashtags are crucial. I think that's what it is. You know, get fit like me.
Yeah, fit tea.
Hashtag corset.
Take some vacations.
Who's paying for it?
You never know.
You really never know. That is so very true when it comes to Instagram. But so now that we have plugged you, everybody knows where to follow you. You have a lot of food on your Snapchat. I'm just curious, are you cooking that or are you eating it?
Well, I haven't really cooked since Thanksgiving a couple years ago. My girl and I, we prepared Thanksgiving dinner and I was like, a mistake. We're like, we're never doing this again.
Yeah, never.
We cooked so much food and it was just us. It was a waste. But I have a chef that I use on and off, so he does a great job of preparing meals for me. Shout out to Chef Ken. He does a great job preparing meals for me. And my mom, when she's in town, she splits the year. She prepares a lot of my meals. She goes shopping with the nutritionist, and we kind of figure those things out. And then I take advantage of our team chef, and then some of the local restaurants in Oregon are amazing.
You're a foodie.
I love to eat.
Yes. And you are a very, very good Twitter follow. And in 2016, you actually tweeted that Steph Curry could not guard you.
I did.
And then in 2017.
Let's go back. Somebody asked me a question. I do my random Q&A throughout the year.
Yes.
And now I'm going to do it every time I fly for the summer. And somebody asked me, and I said, nope.
And then in 2017, what did we find out?
People ask me questions, I answer them. I think everybody's good. Everybody in the NBA is good. It's hard to guard somebody.
Well, of course, you're in the NBA.
It's hard to guard somebody one-on-one.
But you have also said nobody can check me.
I have, but you're making me sound really arrogant right now.
Oh, not at all. You are not at all.
You have to be confident in yourself to play this sport.
Like, what are you supposed to say?
If you don't believe,
if
you're gonna say, yeah, they can lock me down, this guy can guard me, you have to believe in yourself. And if you don't, your team's not gonna, you know, they're not gonna pay you accordingly because you don't have the confidence. You're not gonna play well. Your teammates won't respect you. The league won't respect you. So sometimes you gotta go take it.
Yeah.
But I back it up.
You back it up. Yeah, look at that. Talk-ish, CJ. I like it. So, okay, but honesty hour for just one second. Tell me two people that they can kind of guard you. Who's the hardest to get by?
I will say teams. The Golden State Warriors have a very good team defensively. Okay. They load up on the ball, especially in that last series, as you've seen. All eyes are on you when you drive, especially with Draymond kind of roaming. So
and talking.
You check the clips. It's not a game of one-on-one. If a team you're playing against let you go one-on-one, it's bad defense. They're supposed to be help. So like I always say, the great players can get by that one guy. Or the good players can get by that one guy. The great players get by the first one. The second one comes, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So that's the step for guys that they have to make, and that's the step I'm trying to make. I can get by one guy. Like, that's my job. My job is to be able to score in certain situations in one-on-one. Nobody's supposed to be able to check me. That's why I'm getting paid X amount of dollars. So if in the you look at the grand scheme of things, if I were to say, like, XYZ can guard me, this is how they stop me, I'm lowering my value.
100%. And you're only as good as you believe you are.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think you have to have that in the NBA.
Right.
Because everyone's talking trash to you on the court. You're a bit of a trash talker.
At times. It just really depends on the moment and what's being said on the court.
Yeah.
If you're playing against Draymond, you're talking trash, even if you don't speak.
I even interviewed him once, and he was like, oh, I'm the biggest trash talker. He's fully aware that he talks the most.
It's his MO. Like,
anyone.
He enjoys it. Like, he gets comfort in it.
100%. Who else talks a lot of trash?
Well, when KG was there, KG talked a lot.
He was ruthless, though.
Yeah, he was. I enjoyed it, though, because he's the OG. He can do what he wants. Yeah. When you're a Hall of Famer, you can talk. That's cool. I'm trying to think who else. It just really depends on where you're at. A lot of the younger guys talk a lot of trash. So, like, you could get guys talking from the Phoenix Suns in the preseason. It's like, this is the preseason.
Right.
Like, catch us in, like, 2 weeks.
You know, speaking of the Suns, you get a lot of comparisons with Devin Booker.
I'm older than him, though. So, he's, like, he has to be, like, compared to me.
Okay.
No, he's, like, a good, really good player.
People
he's
compare
like
Devin
years
Booker
old.
To you. I mean, he's the future of the NBA.
Yeah, and he's also,
really
like, 6'6". Like, so, I, like... if I was six, I wish I was 6'6".
Right.
But
right.
No, he's a very good player. Obviously, mm-hmm. he put up 70 points. He can go. Like, I respect everybody in the NBA. I respect him because he works hard. He understands he's good. And that's one of the things, you know, I've learned from Earl and some of my OGs. You have to understand who you are and what you are. And you have to believe it. And sometimes you got to speak it into existence. And I think he's done that. He's done a great job with himself. And he's a very good player. I think we have different games. He's got a nice jump shot, more of like a Ray Allen jumper. He's good in the pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And Earl even kind of compared him to James Harden with his ability to kind of navigate. But I'm more ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
Ha, ha. But
I'm sure everyone listening can just picture the little Euro step.
All of that stuff. But no, I mean, he's a good player. There's a lot of good players in this league. And you know, if people want to compare me to him, I'll take it. And that just means I'm doing something right.
How much harder is the West from the East, or do you not believe that there's an imbalance?
I mean, this year, you look at, we made the playoffs at, what, 40? We were 41-41, so mm-hmm. this year it was closer. You know, the depth of the league, look at the Bucks are down there. The Miami Heat were 500 and didn't make it, do the
almost
tiebreaker.
Almost got there.
So mm-hmm. it was more on par this year. I think in years past there's been more of an imbalance, but, I mean, the Cavs won it all last year, so you can't say the West is better. You could mm-hmm. say one might be deeper at the top or something of that sort, but... I think both the West and the East are very competitive. It's tough to play, you know, on the West Coast. It's tough to do an East Coast swing, especially if you have to go through Miami.
Right, exactly. So, you know, that is one thing I think some people don't realize about the NBA. How much you're traveling and how much traveling can take a toll on the way you play.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of time you spend in the air is, like, astronomical. But people are like... It's fine when people say, oh, they came off a back-to-back. Most fans, I think, don't really understand what that means.
Yeah, it's tough. We had a pretty good record off of back-to-backs this year. We ended up turning the corner as the year progressed, and I think it's just mentally just locking in. But the travel, we're in Portland, Oregon, which is way, way, way
tippy
up
tip,
there.
Tip, yeah.
Yeah, and then we travel the most miles every year. The last 3 or 4 years, we've traveled the most miles. And when we fly to Miami, it doesn't get any further. Unless you go, I don't know, to Maine or somewhere. But it's really, really far, and it's a long trip, and it wears on you a lot. But we all have to go through it, and I won't ever complain about my job because I love it. It's hard. It's strenuous, but it allows me to do a lot of things I wouldn't be able to do in other careers. So I don't take it for granted, and I won't complain. But it is hard.
One thing I kind of always wonder is, okay, for example, you and Dame had an amazing series. I mean, you put up career numbers in the series against the Warriors. Where does your mind go when you have a game like the one you have, you lose? You lose the game, you lose the series.
Yeah.
Where does your mind go in the sense of, am I going to get past this? Are we going to get past this?
I mean, I've been through a lot worse than losing 2 years in a row to arguably the best team in NBA history based on record and performance the last 3 years. So, I mean, going from Lehigh University to the NBA, it never happened before. So when I would tell people I'm going to go to the NBA, they would laugh at me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gone through, you know, difficult phases where this is a tough stretch for us. We've lost some games and we've had up and down years, but c'est la vie. We just got to continue to work hard, get better, understand like what's at stake, understand, you know, how we lost certain games and control the controllables. I'm just going to work like I always do, put my time in, and the rest will handle itself.
But you see people talk about, I mean, Russ and how good a player he is and how he's putting up these numbers, but then because of the team, he isn't able to keep winning. Like, just as a competitor, does that ever get to you?
You hate losing. Like, I lost in bowling last night at Lucky Strike, and I was pissed.
Are you a good bowler?
I have my days.
Okay.
I bowled like a 133 last night.
Elise beat you?
She
we had, I his girlfriend beat him, guys.
I don't know if we bowled in a while, but I mean, she probably could. I'm not consistently good.
Yeah.
I could bowl really well, and I could have a sour game where it's just like under 100. But
under 100?
I have done that in the past.
Jeez.
It happens.
So you're not alley cat strike when you go to the bowling alley.
No, but now that you said that, I'm going to consistently work on it.
Just you should. Better. Just prove me wrong.
And then I'll take pictures of my scores. Like, yo,
look
I'm
at
nice.
Me.
I told you I was nice. But it's tough. You have to compete to the best of your ability. And as a player, you don't construct the rosters. You don't construct the payrolls. You just go play. So I try not to worry about the other stuff, not worry about what other teams are doing, other players are doing. I know that at some point we're going to have a chance, and it's up to us to get better and to trust the organization and the direction we're heading. And it's a process. Everything's not going to happen overnight. You got to be patient and wait for it and work for it, and it'll come.
So you talk about coming from Lehigh, making it to the NBA, only a person to do that. Absolutely amazing. You beat Duke, probably like one of the best college basketball tournament moments ever. And I read this stat, actually, about the playoffs, and it was, so one of nine players who scored 25 or more points in the opening games of the playoffs, four of you were low-rated recruits. So you, Dame, Jimmy Butler, Steph. What do you think that says about, I mean, if you're good, they'll find you?
Yeah, I think that's crucial. It doesn't matter where you go, where you went to school. They'll find you in Europe, China, Asia. Like, it doesn't matter because of the scouting, the technology we have. You can live stream games just essentially anywhere. I can watch my brother's games in Turkey, you know, on my living room couch. So it's just about working hard and taking advantage of the opportunities that are there for you. And Lehigh chose me. It was one of the first schools to recruit me. I didn't know much about them. I learned about them. I took my visit to campus and kind of got a better understanding of the educational aspect of it, what I could get from it. And I took full advantage. And I think you have to go where you're wanted, go where you're needed, and put yourself in a position to succeed, and don't chase, you know, what you think or what may appear to be a better opportunity because it's a bigger school, a bigger program.
So, but does that say anything about maybe the flaws in recruiting?
I mean, I think at the time when I committed to Lehigh, I was a mid-major level player. I verbally committed at 5'11". So I still hadn't developed physically, mentally. I was still learning the game and trying to figure things out. But once I played my senior year out, I felt like I was a high major player, but it was already done. I had already signed my letter of intent. I was committed to Lehigh. Some other teams maybe tried to reach out to me, but I was here. Like, I was in my mind, I was going to Lehigh University. I was going to go to the NBA and get my degree in journalism. Like, that's what I knew.
Did you ever doubt it?
While I was in college?
Yeah, because, I mean, you broke your foot. You
that
had
was
to
the
go
only
through some
time.
Adversity. Yeah.
So there was a couple games where I didn't perform well. It's funny, Columbia, my freshman year, we played Columbia, mm-hmm. and I didn't play well at all. And, I mean, I ended up winning Player of the Year and Rookie of the Year, like, later on in the
light,
year.
Light.
But it was tough. I think I scored 2 points. And I had never...
Really?
I had never gone through that, like, scored, like, 2 points.
Were they free throws?
Probably was a layup. I probably cherry-picked and got an easy lay. But I went through that process where I was like, okay, this is what adversity feels like. I got to get better. I got to be able to withstand this. And then from there, in my mind, I was going to the NBA regardless of the circumstances, injuries. I had regrets of going back to school when I got hurt because I declared for the draft and could have left. So that was the only thing, like, dang, maybe I should have left last year. But in my mind, I was still going to figure it out. Like, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to steal. Whether I get drafted or not, I'm going to make the best of it. And luckily, the Blazers took me at number 10.
One thing about you is, like, you're very focused. I mean, like, you have a goal, that's what you want to do, you set out to do it, but how do you live like that? How do you live in each moment and take advantage of each one?
I think just understanding where you come from and what you come from. Like, I come from Canton, Ohio. Like, I don't...
Yeah, y'all, he's a Browns fan.
Yeah, I'm a Browns
so
fan. Yeah,
I'm
so
sorry.
I understand what it's like to go through adversity and be miserable on Sundays, but no, I just try to always be present in the moment. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you look ahead. Sometimes you look back and try to have regrets. But mentally, I just understand that there's always a bigger picture out there. There's always more out there, and it always could be worse. So just live in the present and be thankful for it. And if you want more, go get more. But you have to work in the present to get that. And that's just always been my mindset. And I just try to focus on the little task at hand and not get caught up in the bigger picture as much. Just focus on the little details every day and consistently work on the little details in life, whether that be like reading or anything to kind of slow down the mind and focus. And that's how I've always done it. And 25 years later, I'm here.
Yeah.
So it's worked out well.
You meditate, correct?
Yes, I do.
How? Walk me through that.
So
I want to meditate. What do I do?
Well, I'll send you this app. So I've been partnered up with Headspace. It's an app I use, and it's great. So I'll shoot you that so you can try that out as well. But it started for me when I got hurt. So I started doing hot yoga before my injury. Then I broke my foot. So I couldn't do it for a while, and that kind of took it away. So just focus on deep focus, mindful breathing, just being aware of your circumstances, aware of your surroundings, and just kind of shut out the world, electronics, whatever. I sometimes put on some classical music.
Ah, put some Beethoven.
A little bit of Beethoven never hurt nobody. So just to kind of block everything out. Sometimes I do it on my drive to practice. Sometimes I got a couch, a big, you know, I call it the King's chair. It's a oversized
King's
recliner.
Chair,
I lean back a little bit and kind of relax, and I just try to take myself away from the world for a bit. But you can definitely use the Headspace app, and then just hot yoga, something like that, or steam room 3 times a week, just to kind of lay in there and just relax, or you sit up against the wall or whatever. And I just deep breaths in through the nose. What did I say? In through the nose, out through the mouth. Do all that stuff. Just kind of get this circle, and then like the belly button. you should be breathing through the belly button. It should be like a circle.
Look at this vinyasa.
But like kind of like that, like a deep breathing, and you just kind of do it for a couple minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it is. I try to do it 3 times a day. I don't. Obviously, some days I don't, but I try to be consistent with it, and it's just a reminder, just kind of relax and shut yourself out from the world for a little bit. But you use the app, it'll be 10 or 15 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because there's really like a lot of NBA players or basketball players that are meditating right now. When I interviewed Joel Berry, he said a lot of his meditation is about visualization.
Yeah.
Like when he's meditating, he is seeing the thing that he wants.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And T-Mac actually reached out to me last year in the playoffs and basically told
me. Grady?
Yeah. He basically told me to kind of break down the game. He was like, lay on your back and you know, like lay down wherever you're at and just kind of break down the game in your mind. Envision it. Calling sets, you coming off screens. He was like, walk through the entire game in your mind and kind of visualize how it's going to play out. And ever since then, I've kind of thought about that. So not just for basketball, but for life, kind of walking through like how I want my life to play out, you know, consistently each day. And I think that's helped. And I don't know if it'll help everyone. I feel like it helps me personally. Everyone's different. But I would say that if you can shut yourself out from the world at some point for a little bit each day and just kind of, you know, deep focus breathing, good for the mind, good for the heart, lowers your heart rate, why not?
Yeah. I love how you're casually just like, well, T-Mac hit me up.
That I didn't mean to like humble brag, but that
I think it's dope. Like, but that's the thing. NBA really has become like a brotherhood. I mean, yeah. Everybody is trying to help everybody. But who would you say is kind of like, who's the coolest person you have in your phone?
I mean, that's tough. That's tough.
Give me a couple.
I have to go through the. I mean, I'm from Ohio, so just imagine whoever's from Ohio. I know
him. You got him.
For the most part.
Okay.
I know a lot of guys from Ohio. I mean, I played for LeBron's AU team growing up, so I've known Bron since I was like 13, 14.
Yeah.
So just being able to watch him and kind of the path he's taken, he's definitely a good role model in terms of doing things the right way on and off the court, helping the community, all the things that I care about. So just seeing him, I mean, I've met a lot of people, so I don't know. I don't want to.
You don't want to leave anyone out. Probably, I said this person is.
You probably got more than me.
I have.
I'll just put it like that. You
hey,
probably
look,
have more.
I never met T-Mac.
People.
That's
I've
cool.
never met Kendrick Lamar, but I've seen him perform.
Okay, you got me. I'm sorry. I'll humble brag for just a second.
Never met Snoop either. Just saying.
Okay, but you have met, like, Drake.
Yeah, but, I mean, Drake's at games all the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, Drake,
different.
Like, thinks he's in the NBA.
You said it. I didn't say it.
Drake thinks he's playing.
What they say?
The
rappers want to be hoopers. Hoopers want to be rappers.
Like yes, you mean they do. Do you want to rap? Dame clearly raps.
I just want to sing some hooks every now and then.
Right. You know, like a Quavo. Quavo.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, see, the thing about you is, you really are very like multifaceted. Well, like obviously you do journalism. You meditate, you play basketball, you're this guy on Twitter that's funny. Like, you have a really, like, a lot of compartments within you. And I think that when people follow you on Twitter or Instagram and you say these, like, smart or snarky things, you're like, whoa, but I think people that know you, like, that's how you act every day. Like, it's not something you're doing on social media.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that because for people that don't know me, they probably think I'm the biggest a-hole in America.
But you're the nicest. Actually, like, that's just your personality.
Yeah, I just... Some things come to me and I just have to say it. I feel like you should be able to express yourself, especially if it's your handle. And when people meet me, they come in contact with me, they start to understand like, oh, okay, he's...
This is how he acts.
Yeah,
are you friends with Chandler Parsons now? Have y'all... y'all squash your Twitter beef?
We don't have no beef. I didn't like the way he came at my team and I addressed it.
I feel
it,
you.
And that
I
was
feel
it.
You.
I don't play those type of
what
games.
About Doc Rivers?
I have nothing against Doc. I think he's a very good
I thought
coach.
What you said was very funny.
I have nothing against Doc or Austin. I think Austin's having a tremendous career and Doc's doing a great job. Obviously, they just dropped a tough playoff series, but if somebody asks me something, I'm going to say it, rather
100%.
They like it or not.
You will not hold back.
That's just how I was raised.
Yeah.
And I have no reason to be afraid of anything, any backlash, as long as it's not OD disrespectful, like I'm good.
You're a very genuine person. Yeah, it's not an act at all. One thing I do definitely want to close out with, because if you guys did not know this, CJ McCollum is trying to steal my job. He does lots of journalism work. You now have your own program where you help young kids want to learn journalism or anything that they want to do. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you do interviews with Adam Silver. You did some stuff with TNT. I just want to hear about that experience and what it's like for you to be able to pass that on to, you know, other generations.
Okay, so I'll start with, I launched CJ's Press Pass last year. That was the first year of it. And basically it's
I love that, CJ's Press Pass.
I was like, oh, it's mine.
It works, yeah.
So we kind of put it together like that, and Ashley from my agency, they did a great job of putting everything together, kind of a plan for my career in terms of when I wanted to do certain things in the community. Because a lot of times when you do stuff off the court, you're not having success on the court, they say, oh, he's doing too much, there's too many distractions, and he's worried about journalism, and he should be worried about his jump shot, and they say stuff like that.
Yes, so they would love that it's 2 J's, like, you know, they try to make it all fancy.
So I told them I didn't want to launch some things into my third year because I felt like I would be established by that point, and luckily the third year was the year I took off. So we launched CJ's Press Pass, and it's a young journalism mentorship program that gives kids the opportunity to learn more about the career, learn more about the field. I bring in mentorship. I try to get them some different gigs where they can write stories, you know, across the Oregon area and get paid for it, cover games. I invite them out to a game. I invite them to iHeartRadio.
Oh, I know. They love that.
Yeah, where I do my radio show at. So they get to come out, and the winner, so basically I give them an assignment. I do all these things for them. They cover the Oregon Sports Award. Oregon Sports Awards through Nike, and then TNT, ESPN, whoever's at the game, they allow them to have a tour and just get a understanding of what it's like to be a journalist from all sides of the spectrum, on camera, behind camera, writing stories, beat writer, everything. So they get to go through that. And then once I give them an assignment, which is to cover the game, write about their experience, I hold a press conference. Some players come, Dame, whoever else, Coach Vanderpool will come out, conduct the interviews, and they write a story, record a story or video, and then I pick a winner. And we've had the first year I did it, the winner, Hannah Ortloff, her piece was produced in the Players Tribune, and I allowed her to come on the radio show. And then this year, I had another young kid who was phenomenal, and I had him come in the studio and basically come on my radio show and give away some gifts as well. But it's just an opportunity for them to learn more about the field so they can decide, like, this is for me, this isn't for me, or that was just a great experience and I got to go to a basketball game.
Love that. That's really sweet. And I think that right now there is such an interest for younger kids to want to go into sports journalism, but it's easy to feel like I may not be able to do this, or like, how am I even going to get my foot in the door? How am I going to experience it? So for you to be able to do that. And the thing with journalism, it also opens your eyes to other things. You could be at that game and say, I want to be a GM.
Yeah.
You know, you could be at the game and say, I want to be a coach. Just all the different things that you can do with sports. Yeah. And I am not just saying this because you're right here. CJ genuinely is good. You really
thank you.
Could be a sports journalist.
I have good days and bad days.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What you got to work on?
My delivery, my posture. If you can see, like, I'm kind of slanted. So
you could be slanted for this. I'm chilling.
My posture could be a little bit better. Obviously, the writing, I write a lot. So just working on my editorial skills. And one more thing I need to tell you.
So please tell me.
I opened the first CJ McCollum Dream Center in Portland, Oregon at the Boys and Girls Club partnership, to where we basically create an environment, a safe learning center, provide culturally relevant books, all that stuff, bring in guest speakers. And I'm going to need some guest speakers. So I figured if I'd ask you on the air, I'd come on your podcast.
I would definitely come. You didn't even have to ask me.
Okay.
I'm there.
I'm going to need you to inspire some of the young men and women in the room and basically allow them, let them know your story coming from Georgia.
Gwinnett County, Zone 7, what up? Shout out Migos. Shout out Falcons.
So you can tell them your story, because there's a lot of kids, you know, a lot of kids growing up the way I grew up, and you don't know what's possible for you. You only know what you see. And
especially when you see someone that looks like you.
Right.
Like you say, you know,
I think that's huge. So I got the map. I kind of showed them where I grew up at, and I tell them stories. I brought in Headspace to kind of introduce them to meditating and just kind of bring it in. I have a coding class that we put together so the kids can learn different.
What?
So the kids can learn different careers that are available to them. There's a lot of jobs, potential jobs, over 1 million jobs available in coding throughout the world. And
really?
It's continuing to grow and rise, and a lot of African Americans and minorities don't know about it. But some of these kids, you know, we like to play video games, 2K and stuff like that. You can get a great job sitting at a desk and doing stuff on the computer that a lot of people don't understand and don't know how to do. So just trying to provide different opportunities and put them in front of different people from different walks of life.
That's amazing.
So let me know when you're going to pull up.
Yeah, I'll pull up. I got you. See, look at you putting that 100 mil big ones to good use.
I'm opening another Dream Center. So the next
let me hold a mil.
I'm a a lot. That's a lot of money. See the way my bank account is set up. I got a checking and a savings.
I got a checking, I got a savings.
And I get penalized.
When you give it to friends.
Yeah. Wells Fargo doesn't like when I take money out.
But that really is amazing.
No, I appreciate it.
I will come, I'll pull up, I'll drop some knowledge, drop some gems, you know. Maybe I'll bring Kendrick. Just kidding.
Yeah, he's probably, yeah.
He's not, I'm not cool enough. That's you. But I will come, and I appreciate you coming on my podcast. You were an amazing guest.
I tried.
Yes.
I tried.
Even though you would not tell me that Steph Curry can't guard you.
Yeah, I said it, so like, but I don't need to like reconfirm what I already said.
It's been tweeted. Follow him on Twitter, Instagram, Snap, all that good stuff. You're much appreciated.
No problem. Thanks,
CJ.
CJ McCollum. He plugged all his social media, so be sure to follow. I know that's very important to him. He will not disappoint. A big moment for me in the interview, one of my favorite moments, was just hearing him talk about really visualizing the things you want, taking the time to truly live in the moment, each moment. I don't think that we do that enough. And those little instances in the day where you can stop and reflect on how far you've come and how much you want and how you're going to get there are very important. And CJ is only 25 years old and years away from his prime, but it's only up from here for him. Hey, maybe next time we talk, he may have Paul George on the squad. Who knows? Thanks for listening. Like, subscribe, leave a review. I'm Taylor Rooks. Until next time.